21-6044, Mitchell Albin versus David Suholtz, defendants, Jeffrey Tillinghast, defendant appellees. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Roach for the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Christopher Roach, and I represent Mitchell Albin, who is the plaintiff and appellant in this case. I respectfully request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Mr. Albin brought claims against the Kenton County Detention Center defendants as well as some medical staff defendants for failure to provide any medical care for a certain period of time while he was at the Kenton County Detention Center. The court below, when deciding to grant summary judgment based on qualified immunity for the Kenton County Detention Center defendants, found that the case law as it relates to the facts in this case was not clearly established. It also found that the individual defendants were not subjectively aware of Mr. Albin's serious medical needs, or on the other hand, didn't do something to provide him with medical care that he needed. There was no dispute below that Mr. Albin's medical needs were objectively serious. He was experiencing diabetic ketoacidosis for a period of close to 16 hours before he was first evaluated for those symptoms. Throughout the time period when he was first brought into the detention center, he had just taken his insulin. He pretty much felt fine. Slowly, over the course of a couple hours, the symptoms progressed, and he went into what he believed to be diabetic ketoacidosis because he had experienced it before.
Did he ever tell anyone that he was going into ketoacidosis?
Yeah. So I don't believe that his testimony specifically said that he was going into diabetic ketoacidosis. His statements were that he was diabetic, that he was vomiting, that he wasn't able to hold down water, that he needed IV fluids, which is something he was aware of from previous hospitalizations, as well as that he thought that he could get help or he might die.
What do you, the biggest problem I see with your case, or the biggest potential, is what the district court said, which is maybe quite understandably his testimony, given kind of the sickness he was under, his testimony is quite vague. So he says, you know, I repeatedly warned folks, but he can't identify who he warned. And then he also says that he has no idea about the timing. So he's like, it could have been 5 minutes or it could have been 15 hours. So if you add those two together, combined with the 1983 requirement that you have to create a genuine issue of material fact for each particular defendant, how can we say that just kind of speculation or just generality that I told folks, but I don't really know the time, is enough to create a genuine issue of material fact for any particular defendant who was at the jail at various times?
The other part of the under the analysis would also be basically under Blackmore. If there are conditions that are so serious that it's obvious even to a lay person, that can help supply the subjective component of deliberate indifference. In fact, defendant Velasco, at roughly 12 p.m., roughly an hour, maybe hour and 15 minutes after these symptoms started, noticed himself that Mr. Albin was torn up, I believe is what he said, that he was vomiting and that there was blood in his vomit. These conditions continued through the night. He was waking up inmates. The type of vomiting that he was experiencing described it as being so powerful and painful that it's just different. It's louder. He's waking inmates up. Inmates are actually coming to provide him help. So it's not only the fact that he was asking for help, and it's based on the, there are a lot of different deputies at the jail. You know, they don't necessarily know everybody by name. The deputies themselves don't, besides Velasco, don't have any independent recollection of seeing Mr. Albin during the time period that's relevant to their claims, or to his claim.
And what was the time period once Velasco noticed the vomiting until when Mr. Albin received the medical attention?
So I'm bad at math, but it was roughly 12:15 a.m. when Velasco would have noticed. It was 3:17 p.m. that same day where Mr. Alvin was first actually seen or evaluated.
I agree that there was, I mean, even your client admits that somebody came and saw him before 3:17. He said he had a vivid recollection of somebody coming into the place where he was located to treat him, which was well before 3:17.
So the way that he stated it in his deposition testimony is that he wasn't sure when it could have happened. It could have been an hour after, it could have been 12 hours because, I mean, it's a detention center, you're relying on unnatural light, there's no way to really tell what time it is. Lights go out for nighttime, but somebody walks in, the lights turn on. And the one thing that we have from the Southern Health Partners defendants, who we settled out with, they actually provide the necessary information for that. There was no evaluation. Nobody came to the dorm to see Mr. Alvin until 3:17 p.m.
But didn't he even say that that those records were actually mistaken? I thought he said that in his deposition again that that they were simply wrong and that he was seen before.
And I think that the context of the question, of that part of that deposition was, it feels like he was seen earlier, but he doesn't have anything that can say definitively that he was or was not. But what we do have, the actual factual evidence that we do have that points to that are the deposition testimonies of the two nurses, as well as the lack of being seen or evaluated by medical for diabetic ketoacidosis till 3:17 p.m. that day.
What was he seen? I thought there was like a 5 a.m. check on his insulin or his blood levels.
That is correct.
So why? How is it a reasonable inference to think that the officers? Why wouldn't he have just told the person who did the blood check, "I'm really sick, and I need help"?
His deposition testimony, Mr. Alvin did make that statement that he told them.
But then, when did that suggest? Who was the person who did the? Was that a nurse, a healthcare practitioner who did that?
It was defendant nurse Vandergrift.
So why wouldn't that be enough to I know you settled with them, so why wouldn't that be enough to shift the liability to them since they're the ones responsible for his health?
Because there was still a 10-hour period, roughly 10-hour period after that check to the point where he actually got seen for the diabetic ketoacidosis. He's continuing to exhibit extreme physical reactions to the condition that he has. At least based on his testimony, he's trying to get help as much as he can in the condition that he's in. He's crawling on his hands and knees to go vomit. The diabetic check at that point in time is also something that doesn't imply any sort of knowledge to the defendants that are the Kenton County Detention Center defendants. There's no evidence in the record showing that they had any idea that, you know, he was seen that morning or that he was, that there was any sort of care plan for what he was undergoing. Based on the nurses and Mr. Alvin's testimony, even filing a sick call slip is a process where he'd have to walk across. He'd have to get there at the time the nurse came. He'd have to get the sick call slip, fill it out, turn the sick call slip in before the nurse would leave.
At what time do you think he first denied his constitutional rights to have, whether it is medical attention or something else?
I think that it would be the first point that he would have asked for medical attention, which I think he believes at least the first time would have been when he first started experiencing the symptoms. So sometime around 10 or 11 p.m. that
10 or 11. Are you saying that they denied him constitutional rights about somebody not seeing him for 2 hours or 3 hours or 1 hour, 10 minutes?
I think at the point that he was asking for help, and no, he was asking for medical attention, and then there was no attempt to get, or at least the evidence, that there are factual disputes here, but when the inference is drawn in his favor, there's evidence that there was no attempt to obtain medical help at that time. And so the ignoring a serious medical condition and just letting it go, that by itself would be...
Do you think, we have to do this so defendant-specific, So all you're right that all the other defendants just don't remember, but for Velasco, he clearly testified that he got a nurse to come see your client. So is the response that there's a genuine issue of material fact on that point?
Yes, because based on the nurse's testimony as well as on the medical records, there was no nurse that came into the dorm at that time. He was there for a 15-minute period. The interesting thing is that Velasco was only there for basically applying or providing coverage for a break. And in that amount of time, he noticed and got the attention, basically found out about these issues that he was having.
Would you say it would have been enough if he had, say it was undisputed, and he had just notified the health practitioner, the nurse, would that have been sufficient to meet his duty?
I think that it would have helped to a certain point. I think that there would be a point later on down the road. Well, specifically for Velasco, I do think that that probably would have covered his duty based on his 15-minute break. I think that if it was somebody who was there longer and hours had passed, 2 or 3 hours had passed and nobody's shown up, I think that they might be in another duty to try to contact again. Pretty much the entire case is just everybody's just pointing at each other like, I don't know what's happening, you have Hoppel saying that he never came in, you have Velasco saying that he did come in and saw him, you have the other defendants who don't remember seeing Mr. Alvin at all, but instead went and said what they would normally do under those circumstances.
So Velasco, he was only with him for 15 minutes.
That's correct.
He says he saw the vomiting, and then Velasco says he told Hoppel, correct?
Yes.
Hoppel's denying that. Did Hoppel continue on, did his shift in at that point as well, or did he continue on?
Hoppel was a night shift, so he would have been on from 11 p.m. on Friday night until 7 a.m. on Saturday morning.
So Hoppel would have continued on over that prisoner, but Velasco was gone at that
yes.
point.
Okay. And can I make one distinction on that?
Sure.
The sergeants and the officers in charge aren't necessarily staying in the dorms at all times. They perform rounds. They go and visit and check and see everything that's happening and then leave. So they do rounds through the jail. He's not staying in that cell the entire time.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Chris Nordlow on behalf of the Kenton County Corrections Officers, each of whom was sued in their individual capacity.
Can you speak up just a little bit, sir?
Yes. There's two scenarios that could explain why there was no medical charting on Friday night or Saturday morning after the blood sugar draw was checked and before Mr. Albin was seen by Nurse Razor Saturday afternoon. The first is medical responded to Mr. Albin's complaints and failed to chart it. Indeed, Mr. Albin testified that he recalls being seen by medical more times than what was charted. The other scenario is that medical did not treat Mr. Albin despite being summoned to the dorm, leaving him on the diabetic schedule per their protocol. Under either scenario, or a combination of both, it is unrefuted that he was not deprived of insulin during his stay. He received it during each of the three shifts, once self-administered before he self-surrendered at 6 p.m., and then he received it again early Saturday morning after going to the medical unit.
But don't you think that they would have had a duty to notify the nurses if the evidence was undisputed that they knew of his debilitating condition? He was vomiting every 15 minutes for 12 hours?
Without question. There is a duty to report that to the medical staff if it's observed that an inmate is sick. And
so this case really comes down to, it seems to me, whether there's enough circumstantial evidence that a jury could believe that each of these defendants had knowledge. And so why wouldn't, the thing that comes to my mind is res ipsa locator, the thing speaks for itself. why isn't just the mere fact that he's in this incredibly poor condition, vomiting every 15 minutes loudly, sufficient to kind of create the notion that they should have known or they did know?
Well, I think generally the testimony supports the fact that there is no evidence, according to Mr. Albin himself, that each deputy did not report to medical staff what they knew. He testified to that unequivocally. And there is no record of deputies calling the medical unit to report a sick inmate. There's no separate record maintained by either the medical staff or the jail about that fact. However, Velasco testified that he did call the medical staff and had a direct conversation with medical staff at about midnight about an inmate puking. There was no mention of diabetic ketoacidosis. There was no mention of anything beyond an inmate reports feeling ill and vomiting. And Velasco reported that to Hopple. Hopple said contact medical. Velasco said he contacted medical. There's a note. Nurse Vandegraaff testified that he went to see Mr. Albin in the dorm at some point, and Mr. Albin refused treatment, which would also be consistent with the rounds done by Nurse Razor at 9 a.m. Saturday morning. She would have breached the door literally feet away from where Mr. Albin's area was, his sleeping area. And Mr. Albin testified that I did not ask for help. I did not complete a sick slip. I don't feel like I should have to complete a sick slip for what he perceived to be an acute condition. So there's these issues of what exactly did Mr. Albin tell each deputy and when. He first thought he had food poisoning from the McChicken sandwich. There was an issue of maybe he was dope sick because one of his charges was possession of heroin. And Mr. Albin himself testified that sometimes he gets confused between what his diabetic symptoms may be and withdrawal. So the corrections deputies, once medical staff was notified, were under Winkler, were entitled to reasonably rely on their medical judgment, who treated him. So whether that happened in the dorm, before he went to actually get blood sugar very early Saturday morning, I think the record said it was like between 3 and 3:30, or if it happened for the first time at 3:30 on Saturday morning. Mr. Albin was seen. He was seen by medical staff, who then the deputies were entitled to rely on their medical judgment on how best to treat him for his reported symptoms. Any dispute over medical standards of care that lingered between the care provided by the Southern Health Partners staff that have since been resolved is immaterial to the corrections officer's qualified immunity.
How quickly do you think, how long of a time between when he notified them and when staff came to see, between when he notified the staff and when the staff notified the nurses would create an Eighth Amendment claim? The timing is just totally unclear on the record. So we do know that a nurse came and saw him in his bunk at some point.
Yes.
But he started complaining, he says, at 11 p.m. at night. If that happened at 5 a.m., that 6 hours, do you think that would be enough to create a Eighth Amendment violation? Do you think they have a duty to notify medical staff sooner?
On
you see what I'm saying? It's just unclear, so I don't know what to make of the fact that it is unclear, number one. But number two, it would seem like if you're kind of on the ground vomiting every 15 minutes that maybe it's somewhat urgent and you shouldn't wait until the end of your shift to notify staff or medical.
Well, what we know from the testimony from Velasco was that he apparently was the first one that Mr. Albin was able to identify. I told that deputy there that was covering that break. And Velasco said, yes, I do recall Mr. Albin. I do recall him telling me he was ill. I recall contacting the officer in charge, Chuck Hopple. And I recall following Chuck Hopple's directive to call the nursing staff and report it.
That's about all he was supposed to do, I guess.
I would agree with that.
What you would say. Sure.
I would agree.
He's not a medic or anything like that.
He is not a medic, and there's no record evidence that Mr. Albin said anything beyond, I feel ill.
Do you think there's a genuine issue? I would agree with that, too. I guess the key question is whether there's a genuine issue of material fact on whether he actually notified medical, because I know he quite states it quite clearly that he did.
I would say no, given Mr. Albin's testimony, that he believed that deputy contacted medical.
Yeah, but do you think it's it was hours later? It could have been another deputy, maybe, because the nurse was unclear. If you would think that if he contacted medical, it would have happened around midnight, or the nurse would have come and seen him around midnight, but it seems like the nurse came like maybe way later than that.
Well, I can speculate, much like Mr. Albin is doing, to accomplish what he urges on appeal, but I would say that the call to the nurse by Velasco happened within minutes of Mr. Albin reporting it to Velasco, because if you recall, Velasco was only in dorm 102 for 15 minutes, and then he went to dorm to a different dorm. So the call that he testified he made would have been made during that period of time he was covering that break on that shift, I believe is what the record supports. So with respect to each individual deputy, during those interim periods, which I know the court is asking, well, how long does it have to be while someone complains about needing medical care? When does the deliberate indifference discussion start? Well, let's start with Tillinghast. Deputy Tillinghast, there's no evidence or circumstances to infer that he, whose shift ended at 11 p.m. Friday night, when Mr. Albin first came into custody, knew about his medical condition.
He never spoke to Albin, did he?
Correct. So at least with Tillinghast, appellant is urging the court to supplant the requirement for probative evidence to overcome summary judgment with mere conjecture. Sergeant Russell was the OIC, the officer in charge Friday night, and therefore there must be some affirmative showing that Russell either authorized, approved, or knowingly acquiesced in the alleged unconstitutional conduct. If Tillinghast didn't engage in unconstitutional conduct, which is what the district court found, I'd like to correct my friend on the other side. He said the court found that it wasn't clearly established. Actually, the court found there was no constitutional violation at all.
This is the key point, right? So he testifies that he starts getting sick near the end of Tillinghast's shift. But he doesn't, Tillinghast has no recollection. So it's not like Tillinghast affirmatively says, no, I never talked to him. He never mentioned that to me, which clearly would probably be enough. I think would have been enough to grant summary judgment to him. But he just says, I don't remember. And then Albin just says, I notified somebody around this time. Do you think that he doesn't say who it was? Why shouldn't that be enough to create a genuine issue of material fact for the 15 or 20 minutes that Tillinghast was still?
Based on this record, the only fair inference is that it was Velasco.
It was later at midnight?
And back to Deputy Velasco, he covered the dorm in 1-2 for only 15 minutes. He informed medical staff that he was feeling ill and vomiting, which Mr. Albin conceded in his deposition. He also testified, although not with great clarity in his recollection, that someone did come to see him after he started feeling ill, although his recollection of that encounter is faint. But it does dovetail with what LPN Vandegrift's testimony was, that Mr. Albin refused medical attention sometime during his shift. So moving on to Sergeant Hopple, who was another officer in charge on the late shift into Saturday, he visited dorm 2 at 12:50 a.m., and he did not see any inmate frequenting the restroom or needing medical attention at that time. If you recall, Velasco had reported to him within the preceding hour that Albin was vomiting blood, and Hopple directed him to call the medical staff, which Velasco said he did, and Albin does not refute. However, Hopple was unaware that Albin was diabetic ketoacidosis. There was no way for him to know that his blood was producing ketones at that point in time. So there's no reasonable inference that Hopple knew more than Velasco on these facts. So there's no genuine issue of material fact.
Well, how do you deal with Hopple's testimony that he didn't believe Velasco told him anything?
I don't think he disputed. I think he doesn't recall it, is what his testimony.
You think it was just he doesn't recall?
Doesn't recall, which when you have a corrections facility with upwards of 700 inmates on a given night where you're making rounds and you're not going to recall every encounter, especially where you're not being asked to write an incident report. You might recall an incident report more so than you would just a general call of someone reporting someone feeling ill. So I think it's definitely understandable, incredible, that they're not going to recall every single conversation with deputy staff. Deputy Ryder was on shift in the dorm where Mr. Albin was located on Saturday between 7 and 11 a.m. Again, Mr. Albin speculates that Ryder knew about his condition, but there's insufficient evidence that would allow a reasonable jury to find in his favor that Ryder did know about his serious medical condition. Albin declined to see the LPN, Nurse Razor,
With respect to Ryder, he was there for kind of the longest period of the time overnight, I believe. Would you say that, or that, I guess the argument on the other side would be just the mere fact that he was crawling on his hands and knees to the bathroom to puke every 15 minutes, to vomit every 15 minutes, would be enough to at least give him knowledge that something was wrong? And so why wouldn't that create a genuine issue of material fact?
The actual time Ryder was in the dorm was not as Your Honor recalls.
Okay.
He was in the dorm only from 7 a. to 11 a.
Okay.
On Saturday morning.
But do you think that, if the testimony is he's crawling on his hands and knees to the bathroom quite frequently, that he would have at least been on notice if that was true?
I believe the testimony about the crawling on the hands and knees was during the night shift on Friday, not going into Saturday morning. And with him starting at 7 a.m., Ryder, Mr. Robin would have been seen for his finger stick blood sugar test and insulin just within hours of that, and he left at 11. So anything that happened in that interim time between 11 a.m. and when Nurse Razor saw him at 3:30 in the dorm, he would not know. He was not on shift. Sergeant Smith was on duty from 3 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday. He was in dorm 2 at 8:28 a.m. and again at a little bit after noon, about 12:30.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
Your time is up. If you could just wrap it up quickly.
Yes, I will. And Sergeant Smith would have been the last individual sued, and much like the other defendants, especially those in supervisory capacity, he just did not have sufficient information to subjectively violate Mr. Albin's constitutional rights, and I would ask that the district court decision be affirmed. Thank you.
I just want to make a few points as quick as I can. Defendants had made basically the argument that the two options out of the facts that we have is that medical responded and failed to treat, or that medical didn't provide any, medical failed to actually document what they actually did when they came in there. He's overlooking, though, or the defendants are overlooking the fact that there's also the possibility that they never contacted the medical department. Based on Alvin's testimony, he never refused any treatment. In Vandergraaff's deposition, there's an issue about the time frame where he supposedly this refusal happened. Earlier in the deposition, he thought it happened in the dorm. After going through the deposition, talking about the process, it would have happened in the booking area, which would have been at the time period that Mr. Albin was still feeling fine, if it happened at all.
Which defendant do you think you have the strongest case against, or do you well to speculate?
I think against the three deputies that were in the dorm on posts, so Velasco, Tillinghast, and Ryder. I think that those
are the strongest. Velasco because he was on a, what was it, 30 minutes or 15 minutes that came through and reported him, and he should have done more than that?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that it's even along the line with Gerritsen and Napier. In the Napier case, the intake booking officer was only with him for 2 minutes. And so and put this, you know, this booking information, this diabetic information into a medical stack where the inmate may not get seen for hours. In this case, if you believe if you resolve factual inferences in favor of the plaintiff appellant, then there's evidence that in this 15-minute time span that Velasco never actually contacted medical at all. And that's where his, even that 15-minute time period is, it can give a rise to the actual claim for the subjective component of the deliberate indifference claim. Tillinghast also had a very specific way that he testified that he did his head counts at the end of the shift, which would have been at a few minutes before 11, which is he goes to each bunk, he checks on each person, and he checks on their health. So there's an actual individualized way that he would do this that would put him in direct contact with Mitchell at the time that he's starting to experience these alarming symptoms. And then for Ryder, he was in the dorm the longest with Mitchell Alvin. He had the most opportunity to see the things that were happening to him. And that's, my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Roach. And thank you, Mr. Nordlow. We'll take the case under submission. Clerk may call the next case.